Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette.
Welcome to episode 134 of the Gunblog Variety Cast, a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. How are you doing, Aaron?
Well, it's been a very busy week for Operation Blazing Sword, so let me tell you all about it. First, I'm pleased to announce that people can now support Operation Blazing Sword through Amazon purchases. We are now a recognized charity on Amazon Smile. So if you click on the link in the show notes and then you buy things on Amazon, a portion of your purchase will be donated to us. It costs you nothing and it helps us out. It's just like an Amazon affiliate link, only the money goes to the charity instead of a person. I'm also happy to announce that I have finally received a ruling regarding how to treat taking an LGBTQ person shooting as a charitable donation. Now, I've written down the specifics of it on my blog, and I encourage our listeners to go read it. But the short version goes like this. If you spend less than $250 on a single outing, like I think most people will, then you don't need any sort of donation letter from us. Just claim it on your taxes and keep your receipts handy. Now, if your expenses are over $250, such as you maybe buy out a range for the day, or you get a concealed carry class and you throw it open to members of the queer community, things like that, then you're going to need a donation letter from us. And that's not a problem. Just email me, tell me what you did, show me your receipt. I mean, keep the originals, just, you know, scan them, photocopy, whatever. And I will be happy to send you a thank you letter on official stationery saying, okay, you donated however much you spent to Operation Blazing Sword. And finally, I had a great time talking about Blazing Sword before Maryland's shell issue this past weekend. I'm not going to go into great detail on that because I believe that is our main topic for the week, so we'll discuss that later. Finally, I've worked out the details so that Blazing Sword can hold the $10,000 that's going to be raised in the 10K for 2A challenge that you issued to get you to GRPC 2017. So if anyone wants to raise 10 grand for pro-gun charities and nonprofits and also want to see Sean dressed in, you know, pink Liberty spikes and skinny jeans and Crocs, please send us a donation and have a little note in there saying that it's specifically for a 10K for 2A, and we will add it and then disperse it later. Now, where to send that donation as well as more information is also in the show notes.
Now, I never said anything about skinny jeans and Crocs. I said, like the love child of the Joker and Pinkie Pie. I weigh about 220 pounds, and I'm not putting any skinny jeans on. Crocs either, come to that.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. You know, maybe what we need to do is have somebody do an artist conception of what I would look like as the love child of the Joker and Pinkie Pie. That would be a much better marketing tool than us talking about it. Not that I think you guys can raise $10,000. I mean, please.
You know, that would be hilarious. I am going to see what I can do. I could talk to the artist who made my pony avatar, but she's like a professional artist now and she's expensive.
Yeah.
But, I wonder if I could get her to do it and then write it off as a donation.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
And we should be clear, this is all 501c3 tax-deductible donations, right?
Oh, yes. It is absolutely tax-deductible. And even if we don't raise the $10,000 needed to get you to dress up and get you to GRPC, the money is still going to charity.
Okay.
So regardless of where you go, that money is going to a good place.
So that means that if you're a corporation or if you run a firearms business... So, you know, what happens if you're, say, Glock or SIG or Ruger and want to give some money to charity? You could do this.
You know, that would be awesome because not only would we just gladly accept their money, but I would make a big deal out of it by saying that Glock, SIG, Ruger, or whoever supports the LGBTQ community.
mm-hmm.
by donating. Because, I mean, a lot of this is hopefully going to go to the Second Amendment Foundation. We've got to make sure that we have their permission. But a lot of this is also going to go to Blazing Sword. And I will be happy to make a big deal about this and coo all over them for supporting the armed queer community.
So Saturday, I'm off to shoot another IDPA match at H2O Fowl Farms. But this time, I'm going to be wearing my brand new gamer IDPA fishing vest.
Now, I would think it would be a shooting vest and not a fishing vest.
Eh, whatever. We call it whatever we feel like. I think we call it a fishing vest just to piss people off.
Screw you. I do what I like.
Right. You kind of look like, you know, a 70s photographer or, you know, your grandpa going fly fishing. But it is the approved gamer gear, so I've got one. I got it on eBay. Got a good price for it. I think I spent like $40, including shipping. It's, you know, used, obviously, but it's clean, so I'm good. And Monday, I take Dices to her first obedience class. It's called distraction proofing, and my goodness, is distraction proofing exactly what that dog needs. Squirrel, squirrel, squirrel. As soon as there's another dog around her, she wants to go see the dog. She doesn't want to listen to instructions. So, yeah, it should be an interesting class.
Thanks to Lucky Gunner and Remington for their support of the Gunblog Variety Cast. From Golden Saber to Range Rounds, get a full lineup of quality Remington ammo that ships fast at LuckyGunner.com.
Well, let's get on with the show.
Indeed. This week, Beth gives us a little conundrum to consider. Why we should stop being preoccupied with being nice and instead start focusing on being good.
I know my topic this week sounds maybe a bit strange, especially at first glance. I'm asking people not to be nice. That's right, don't be nice. Instead, I'm hoping that people will focus more on being good. So I want to take a little time to actually explain what that means, especially when it comes to just living your life, being situationally aware, being smart and cautious, and paying attention to what's going on around you. As I waited in line to order a quick lunch on the go, I spotted a little girl and her family at a popular fast food location in the busy Atlanta airport. Yes, once again, I was traveling and needed a little something to do, so grabbed a quick bite to eat and decided to watch what was going on. Probably around 6 years old, this little girl was guarding her food and giving a very mean look to a man as he walked by her table and joked about sharing her French fries. When the stranger finally tossed away his trash and disappeared into the crowd, the girl's mom reprimanded her and told her not to be so rude. I was a bit bemused. I wondered how many times that same little girl had heard her parents warn her to never talk to strangers. But in this case, she was being punished for not talking to a stranger. The thing is, when it comes to being nice, we've been taught from a very young age to be respectable. We've been reared to use good manners at all times. We teach our children to be polite. And we correct them or even punish them when they are not. Females especially are expected and reminded to nurture, to care for, to be kind, and to be considerate. Girls are even given a heavy dose of the instruction, be sweet. And in the South, where I live, people ooze Southern hospitality and oftentimes engage in deep, personal, possibly overly revealing conversations with complete strangers. I've been an unfortunate witness to many of these TMI discussions, most often in the grocery store, at the hair salon, or in the doctor's office. Being nice is just not all it's cracked up to be. Think about it. Being nice can sometimes get us into trouble. Being kind and considerate means we might ignore our instincts, that gut feeling that something or someone isn't right. We've been taught that if we're uncomfortable, we should hide it. Or we should keep it to ourselves, and we should continue to put on a facade that everything is right. But what if something is not right? What if someone is truly making you feel uncomfortable or unsafe? Should you still be nice in that situation? We might even make poor decisions since we're so worried about other people and what they might think or what they might need. And being well-mannered might even mean that we allow ourselves to get into uncomfortable or unsafe situations. I think a lot of times of just traveling and getting on an elevator. That could be an uncomfortable or unsafe situation because people could get on that elevator, they could follow you, they could see where your hotel room is, and being nice is what causes us to get into these situations. We don't want anyone to think poorly of us. and we certainly don't want them to think we're thinking poorly of them. While there most certainly is a proper time and place to use good manners, and of course to teach our children to do the same, there are proper times and places for the complete opposite. So maybe right now, here we go, I am giving you permission to not be nice. I'm telling you it's okay to do what it takes to protect yourself and your loved ones. So there might be a time where you need to be aggressive, be firm, be rude, be bold, and be brave. Be willing to bend the rules or even break them entirely if it means that you win. Be relentless in your decision to not be a victim and to never give up. To do all those things requires that we're not nice. Please remember this advice, and don't forget to share it with others as well. We don't always have to be sweet. If a stranger is making your child uncomfortable, let her put up her guard and practice what it's like to be cautious, sensible, and aware. And make sure your children understand the difference. Sure, some people are just being friendly and just making conversation, and they have no ill intent whatsoever. But get your children started early with thinking about those things, thinking about that person's intent, so that they can be aware and prepared. Instead of being so preoccupied with being nice, let's focus on being good. Good people who know the difference between right and wrong, who are responsible and reasonable, and who are willing to protect life at all costs. Thanks for listening. Until next time, please stay safe and be well armed.
You can read more from Beth at usconcealedcarry.com/blog and click on Pacifiers and Peacemakers in the left sidebar.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the Donate or Subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
Felons behaving badly. Suspect turns gun on himself after standoff.
I love a happy ending.
A suspect accused of sex crimes shot himself after an hours-long standoff with police in Gaston County. The man was 49-year-old suspect. Police had come to the home on Scott Drive with a warrant to arrest the suspect on charges of sexual misconduct. When police arrived at the home, the suspect greeted the officers with a pistol in his hands. He did not point the gun at police, but threatened them over the course of the next couple of hours. Suspect then barricaded himself inside the home. The suspect remained fairly communicative with the negotiators and police during the course of the incident, making the authorities hopeful that the situation would not end in violence. At one point, tear gas was launched inside the home in an attempt to force suspect out of the home. Afterwards, the team went in to collect the suspect. At this time, however, they heard a shot. Authorities found the suspect with fatal wounds to his head from his own pistol. He was taken to the hospital, but died as a result of his wounds. Family members say that suspect was resisting arrest because he had spent time in jail before and did not want to go back. Family members also asserted his innocence of the recent sexual crimes that he was being accused of. Investigations of the incident are now taking place. From these reviews, police hope to gain knowledge as to whether anything could have been done in this situation to achieve a better result.
Well, you know, if someone comes to the door armed with a gun, I don't really think it's going to end well. I mean, especially when it's the police at the door and the guy has it in his hand, for crying out loud. I'm actually surprised he didn't try and draw on them and just suicide by cop. So, Sean, what kind of a person was 49-year-old suspect?
Carry concealed weapon, misdemeanor, pre-structured. Contributing to the delinquency of a minor, misdemeanor, pre-structured. Larceny over 200, attempted, misdemeanor, pre-structured. Profane language, misdemeanor, pre-structured. Yes, at one point it was illegal to use profane language, but you had to use it where other people could hear you. Receiving stolen goods, misdemeanor, pre-structured. Willful, wanton injury to real property, misdemeanor, pre-structured. 5 counts, drug paraphernalia, use, possess, misdemeanor, class 1. 10 counts, maintain any place, controlled substance, felon, class I. 2 counts, possess schedule 6, felon, class I. 2 counts, possess schedule 4, felon, class I. Possess schedule 2, felon, class I. 6 counts, manufacture schedule 6, felon, class I. 6 counts, possess with intent to sell, Schedule 6, felon, Class I. Felony breaking and entering, felon, Class H. Larceny, felon, Class H. Larceny after breaking and entering, felon, Class H. 3 counts, manufacture, Schedule 2, felon, Class H. 5 counts, possession with intent to sell, Schedule 2, felon, Class H. And 6 counts, 6, possession of a firearm by a felon, felon, Class G.
Wow. Now, possession of a firearm by a felon, is that considered a violent crime in your state?
Well, I don't know. I'm wondering why he could get 6 of them and never be referred to the feds for his 5 years at Club Fed somewhere.
Oh, geez. But, I mean, looking at all this, all the violations, the fact that he'd done jail time before, and the fact that he has been accused of, well, they specifically say sexual misconduct, so I don't know if this is just grabbing a girl on the butt in a bar, or if he actually molested or raped someone, but, you know, when the police said they wanted to achieve a better result, I'm not really sure if you could have gotten a better result. I mean, okay, I know that sounds callous, especially when I said I love a happy ending because I thought this was going to be a much more violent person. And I don't know. This fellow definitely had a very high recidivism rate.
49 years old and more charges than you could shake a stick at. You know what? I think we've wasted enough money on this guy.
About the best I can say is my sympathy to his family.
Baron is on assignment and will return soon.
This is Bob Main from the Handgun World podcast, reminding you that this podcast is a member of the Self Defense Radio Network. Check out all the great podcasts at selfdefenseradio.net.
Main topic, Maryland shall issue. Aaron, I understand that you jumped on a jet plane, you went all the way to the great state of Maryland, and then you gave a speech.
I did indeed. Actually, last year, sometime in October, I think, I was contacted by a fellow by the name of John Mountjoy, who actually heard about me through Blazing Sword, and he was, and still is, in fact, a volunteer trainer for us. And he sent me a message, and he said, "Hey, Aaron, I talked to the leadership of Maryland Shall Issue yesterday, and they are interested in bringing you up here to give a keynote address at one of our meetings. We'll cover airfare, lodging, and per diem. Would you be interested? You have a strong message about the diversity of the pro-2A movement." And my response was something along the lines of, "Great googly moogly, people actually want to hear me talk? And they're actually going to pay money for this? Wow." So, yeah, we took a while to get things finalized, made sure that my dates corresponded with his because, you know, I was getting ready for Big 3 East, and then there was the hurricane and things like that. And then we settled on the first week of March. And so, you know, everything worked out. I booked the hotels. I booked the planes. I actually had to take 2. I had to transfer in Atlanta.
Pretty much everyone has to transfer in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think everything on the East Coast either goes through Atlanta or New York.
So what is Maryland Shall Issue?
So Maryland Shall Issue is the state-level gun rights group, just like Florida Carry is for Florida and Grassroots North Carolina is for your state. The problem with Maryland is that, unlike your state and mine, Maryland is very, very anti-gun. They have a permit, but in order to get it, it's basically handed out as a political favor. There is a joke that says the only way you can qualify for a concealed carry permit is if you've already been murdered. It's not quite that bad, but it is pretty bad. I mean, as I had it explained to me, if you live in a high-crime neighborhood and your neighbor on your left gets shot and your neighbor on your right gets shot, you still can't apply for a permit because you haven't been shot. And this is also a state where you have to have a permit in order to buy and receive a pistol. It's something called the handgun qualification license. So it's pretty bad. And so I came up to address these people who are living in, I called it Mordor on the Potomac. and I actually addressed them thus. "To my brothers and sisters in occupied Maryland, I bring you greetings from free America." And that got me a round of laughter. I mean, it was sort of the knowing, rueful laughter. And I praised them because I couldn't live in their state, but they do. And instead of running away and then making it easier for more and more anti-gun laws to be piled on the books, they've chosen to stay and fight. And I really applaud that. And so I wanted to talk to them and congratulate them and cheer them on. And that was part of the speech. And the other part of the speech was talking about the LGBTQ issue and what it's like to be queer and have a gun and things like that.
So did you bring your gun?
I did not. Maryland has reciprocity with nobody. I couldn't bring a gun. The only thing I brought was my 4-inch Columbia River knife and tool M1614T folding knife. Because it opens really smoothly. It looks really wicked. It's got a tanto tip. I had to check it in my luggage, but I at least had something. Yeah, when you're in Maryland, you're basically reduced to defending yourself with kitchen cutlery and condiments, i.e. pepper spray.
Yeah, I've been to Maryland. I used to live in Maryland a long time ago, and it was bad when I was there, and it's got nothing but worse since. So what'd you do? Did you just drop in, give your speech, and get whisked away, or was this an all-day affair?
It was an all-day affair. I was picked up at my hotel at 8:30. I got to the Elks Lodge, where they have their meetings at 9, and I got to meet the members of the board, I guess. Got to meet them all, very nice fellows. Had coffee, had donuts. They had their meeting where they did the whole, you know, we will read the minutes and we will talk about new business and we will resolve old business. And it was very Robert's Rules of Order. To be honest, I didn't understand most of it because they were talking about Maryland politics, which I don't understand, or talking about old MSI business, which I hadn't been privy to. So I don't know what they're talking about when they're, well, you know, do we choose to fund this or not? I don't know. I mean, I don't want to seem rude and make it sound like I wasn't listening, but after a while I realized I have nothing to add here. I'm flattered that they wanted me there so I could see how it was run. And that was informative, just in terms of structure. But the actual meeting portion, it did nothing for me. But time wasn't wasted. I went over my speech. I fixed it, polished it, just had more time to work on it. And that went on until about, 11:30 or so. And they took me to lunch at a barbecue place, which was a bit of a challenge because I was dressed rather nicely and I didn't want to spill anything on me because that would ruin the effect. And everyone else was wearing blue MSI polos. You know? If they spill barbecue sauce on themselves, you know, what are you going to do? But it would have just been horrible on me. So I had to take extra special care. And then we went back to the Elks Lodge for the actual meeting. We started late and it ran long. When I got up there, I looked out at the audience. It was a sausage fest. I think there was only, well, I mean, I know that there was one woman there. I don't think there was any others. I believe they were all white. They all looked middle-aged. There were, I think, two kids that were brought along by their parents and they were very bored.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So this was very much the stereotypical, just the example of the gun owner. White, male, middle-aged, conservative. Nearly all of them were overweight. I mean, and I don't mean that as a bad thing. I have too much pounds on me. But, you know, they weren't like slim 20-somethings is really what I'm getting at. They were just your average gun owner. I look at the pictures of myself and someone filmed my presentation. I'm, of course, my own worst critic. I'm looking at that and I see, and even though I look so much better than I did at GRPC, I've learned so much. And I snapped a selfie of myself and I thought I looked really good. But I look at that video of myself and that little evil critique part of my brain is just going, man, 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 man. I could let that get to me. But I decided that I was going to make this a victory instead. And I go, okay, worst case scenario, they look at me and they see this is obviously a man in a dress. If that's what happened, here's the thing. They still treated me with kindness, with courtesy. They treated me like a lady. They didn't do any of the stereotypical things that we would expect the average stereotypical gun owner to do to the average stereotypical transgender. They were lovely to me, and they received my address. And when I was done, I spoke for about 30 minutes. There was a question and answer period that ran for 15. And the only reason it ran for 15 was because we were running out of time, and the chairman very politely but firmly stood up and put an end to the questions. There were at least four more. I mean, I could have kept going for another 15 minutes, but he just decided we were running out of time. People were shifting and getting antsy. And so I was thanked. They handed me a special MSI tactical pen, you know, one of the few self-defense things you can carry in Maryland. Oh, and I got a standing ovation, so I think I did pretty well.
So was it hard to prep for your speech? I mean, 30 minutes talking, that's a long time if you're just the only person talking.
It was and it wasn't. I mean, a good chunk of the presentation I've already done before in interviews, and I just needed to put it to paper. Some parts of it were new, and I had to do research. Having to explain some of the intricacies of queer life to these very lovely straight people, and I had to do some research. That really wasn't difficult. It was mostly finding the time, because as you recall, I was at Mag 40, and then I was terribly sick. And then in the time between being sick and getting on the plane, I had to put on the finishing touches. But it wasn't really difficult. I already knew in my head what I wanted to say. I just had to put it on paper. Because otherwise, if I'm trying to do this from memory, I know what would happen. I would be going along, and then my brain would just decide, we're going to forget that word. I don't know if this happens to you, but I just have sudden vocabulary failure at times where I go, I can imagine it perfectly, but the only word that comes to mind right now is thing. You know, so blah, 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 blah. What is that word? So I scripted it out so that I wouldn't have to worry about that. So that took some time, just typing, but I don't know. I don't think it was really hard.
What did you think about it? Is this something you would do for other groups? Would you fly to other states and talk to their gun rights groups?
I would absolutely do this. In fact, John Mountjoy, who sponsored me, said that I did such a good job, I should start charging appearance fees. That's something I'll consider, but it's not something I would do for everyone. Like, you know, a little charity or a little firearms nonprofit that doesn't have a lot of money, I wouldn't do that. You know, if they just pay my way, you know, room and board, I will be happy to go up there and speak before them. This does take a significant portion of my life. So, yeah, if you're not a nonprofit, I'm definitely going to start charging some sort of appearance fee. Because, hey, I guess I'm popular, and I need to see if I can turn this into a career.
Yep. Well, nobody's going to pay me to speak. Podcast is proof of that.
You know what's really funny is that when I was growing up, this will come as a surprise to exactly nobody, but when I was little, I was an absolute motor mouth. You could not get me to shut up. And my parents would tell me out of frustration, Aaron, be quiet. No one is ever going to pay to hear you talk. And I'm glad to have proven them wrong.
All right.
So yes, if you would like Aaron Pellett, founder and media coordinator of Operation Blazing Sword, to speak for your meeting or nonprofit, please contact me at aaron@blazingsword.org.
You know, Aaron, I think all this practice talking on the podcast has made it a little easier for you to stand in front of people and talk.
You know, that's entirely possible, and I thank you for that.
Take a look in the show notes, and you can see the video and the transcript of Aaron speaking at Maryland Shall Issue.
Tiffany is on assignment and will return next week.
And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Pellett.
Come on, every pony! It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Aaron Pellett!
I had an interesting experience while at Mag 40. One of the students, who was diabetic, started experiencing hypoglycemia, and I had that prepper moment of, oh, I have just the thing for this excitement. Now, for those who don't know, if you have diabetes, you are prone to two types of blood sugar problems, too much and too little. Too much blood sugar is known as hyperglycemia. As a diabetic friend of mine puts it, hyperglycemia is when your sugar hits 400 or so, and you get a little crazy, then you pass out, and unless you get insulin, you die. Now, most preppers don't have access to insulin. You need a prescription for it. And because it's light-sensitive and requires refrigeration, you can't carry it around in your first aid kit. There are some shelf-stable things which help, like Glipizide, but that's also prescription. So unless you're diabetic yourself or a licensed EMT, if someone else experiences hyperglycemia, the only thing you can do is call 911 and hope an ambulance gets there in time. However, the other side of this tightrope is hypoglycemia, which is your blood sugar drops through the floor, you get crazy, then pass out and die, according to that same friend. But unlike hyperglycemia, hypoglycemia is very easy to fix. Just give that person some sugar. Now, the fastest way to do that is with a glucose IV, but again, unless you're a licensed professional with medical gear, you won't be carrying that around. But there are other ways to get that sugar into that person's system quickly. And the key word here is quickly. Many sugary snacks are made with sucrose, which is also known as table sugar. Sucrose is actually a compound of two other sugars, glucose and fructose, and before those sugars can get into the body, they must be separated via a digestive enzyme within the small intestine. Now, there are many bad things to be said about high fructose corn syrup, but one good thing about it is that it doesn't need that particular enzyme to get into the body. So if you have a soda nearby, that's a good way to get sugar into a hypoglycemic person. But soda cans are large and not a really convenient part of a first aid kit. Which brings me to what I had in my range bag at Mag 40, a sealed tube of honey. Now, honey is amazing for different reasons. One of those reasons is that it just doesn't go bad, ever. Another reason is that it contains both glucose and fructose, but they aren't linked, meaning that they absorb into the body faster than sucrose. So when I noticed my friend wasn't well and people were looking for sugar to give her, I ran to the blowout kit in my range bag, got the stick of honey, cut the end off with a knife, and I squeezed that honey into her mouth. I'm not going to say that it saved her because there were plenty of other people there helping, but I know for a fact that it didn't hurt her. And more importantly, which is why I'm sharing the story with you, because I don't want to be one of those people who say, ooh, aren't I awesome? This experience showed me that it wasn't dumb to have a container of honey in my medical supplies. 9.3% of Americans have diabetes, so odds are really good that you know someone who has the disease and might need help with a hypoglycemic episode. Be prepared for that. Best way to do that? Well, put honey in your kit. You can buy 100 sticks of clover honey for only $16.95 from Amazon. They're 6.5 inches long, contain 5 grams of honey each, so they fit easily inside a purse, backpack, or first aid kit. They're shelf stable and won't go bad in high heat or humidity, so make them a part of your everyday carry. And even if you never need to help a diabetic, you can always use them to sweeten your coffee or your tea.
Not only can you subscribe or donate to the podcast, you can also make a contribution to the LGBT Training Ammo Fund. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the LGBT Training Ammo Fund donation button in the right sidebar. I'll use this money to pay for range fees, targets, and yes, ammo for the people I teach. And thanks for your support.
This week, Weird is back in that gold mine, Loaded Conversations. What happens when someone wants to open a really nice indoor shooting range in northern New Jersey? Total anti-gunner freakout. Loaded Conversations invites the leader of the gun range opposition to show us just how reasonable their reasonable regulations can be in this week in anti-gun nuttery.
Hey guys, I gotta say, listening to the Loaded Conversations podcast every week is really being detrimental to my health. And you can probably hear it in my voice. But this week, I'm not focusing on Rebecca and her panel of Bloomberg and Brady-endorsed activists, but instead on Chance Parker, a New Jersey resident who started a petition to halt the construction of a gun club being opened in his town. I'm framing this whole segment to display how reasonable their desire for gun control laws are. But first, let's start on a light note.
So that in itself, could you imagine a row of 67 ranges, all everybody cracking off rounds with extended business hours?
I was in a row with four people, and I thought I was going to lose my mind.
Right. So this.
I wish we had those damn silencers, man. That would really, that'd do the trick right there.
Well, that didn't take long. 2 weeks ago, Rebecca was ridiculing the Hearing Protection Act. Now she's on board. I must note that this range will be a 100% indoor facility. My shooting club has an indoor range, and you can just barely hear if somebody's inside shooting if you're right in the parking lot. Also, the indoor ranges are available 24 hours a day to the club members for that exact reason.
We've got a proposition of a institution, a business that's very much, as you're aware of, in a high-growth industry, gun sales, gun ownership, everything like that, due large in part to a lot of the fear-mongering and scare techniques that out there that are being employed by all your usual suspects.
Scare tactics? Somebody tries to open an indoor shooting club in your town, and you're trying to block them, and doing it using made-up crap as scare tactics. And we're just getting warmed up. Just wait till you hear what else was said.
A marketplace, which is, you know, unparalleled in itself. So right across, you know, a couple miles from the New York State line, you've got access to the train, which dumps people right out there.
Did you hear that? Access to the train. When you have a metropolitan area with a robust public transit system, people start getting rid of their cars. Hell, it costs a fortune just to park a car in most major cities. But meanwhile, the antis do everything they can to keep shooting ranges away from public transit. Because if you can't shoot a gun, why would you own a gun?
So you take the combination, the formula of a high-growth, violent industry.
So owning and shooting guns automatically makes you violent? Even carrying a firearm isn't a violent act. As a matter of fact, when you note that personal firearms deter 90% of all violent encounters without a single shot being fired, it's just the opposite. But set those gun owners like myself, whose primary reason for owning firearms is personal protection, aside. Target shooters and collectors are violent people too? This is what they think of us. Charming, isn't it? Not only is he concerned about town residents that a shooting club might be opened up, he's concerned about the police.
None more than Jersey as it comes to transportation, as it comes to the reciprocity of concealed handgun carry licenses, so... All of a sudden, they've got to get up to speed on all this, and you know, we find that, you know, to be asking a lot of a local police department.
So wait, demanding a police department know and understand the law is asking a lot? Also, do the police really need to do much to understand New Jersey gun law? New Jersey has zero reciprocity, so if a person is concealed carrying, they need to produce a New Jersey permit. For all other accounts, the Firearms Owner Protection Act applies. Next, they will dive into the fact that this club will also have a gun shop. A club selling guns is even more objectionable to them. Think about that. They want universal background checks where all transfers of firearms must be done through a licensed dealer. But when a dealer comes to their town, they get all, not in my backyard, and get pissed if you can walk to it from the train station. When talking about the shop, Dwight Panazzo of Gays Against Guns in the New Jersey Brady Campaign chapter has some ironic humor.
Okay, but in all fairness, that doesn't mean that it's going to be 16,000 square feet of guns. We don't know how many thousands of square feet they're going to devote to dildos.
Adorable. But it gets worse.
And but that would probably be more tightly regulated. Let's just
Absolutely.
Yep, this team of anti-gun rocket surgeons just declared that devices for personal pleasure were more regulated than firearms. Bonus points that they were talking about New Jersey. I did a quick Google search for dildo laws. You can just guess what I found. A few states have some obscure and rarely enforced obscenity laws that include sex toys. Give us a call when there's a regulatory agency that has SWAT teams that oversees the sex toy industry.
As is renting guns to minors as young as 10 years old. Which is part of their business plan.
Okay, here's the culture gap we're dealing with. I didn't shoot a firearm until I was 19 years old, but my family was anti-gun. My dad owned his first rifle at 10. Most lifelong shooters I know had similar experience. Since my daughter lives in a house with guns, I will be teaching her gun safety as soon as she's old enough to understand the four rules of gun safety and be safe on the range. Also, they're making it sound like just some 10-year-old's gonna wander in during recess and go and grab a machine gun. But actually, they're talking about parental consent with a training program, and they're only allowed 22s.
I didn't give my 10-year-old a butter knife. Oh, right. I mean,
right.
Exactly. I still don't. She still can't handle it.
What? My daughter is f***ing 3 and she gets a butter knife. Hell, I've supervised her with steak knives because she's very interested in cooking. If she gets to 10 and can't be trusted with a carving knife, let alone a butter knife, I'm not dealing with the average child. Something tells me this reflects more on Rebecca's worldview than the maturity of her 10-year-old daughter.
Facilities within one mile radius of 3 schools. It's in a 1.2 mile radius of 4 schools. So literally there's a mom and dad and kid traffic running by this doorstop every day.
This is northern New Jersey. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a location in that part of the state where that isn't the case. And what are they worried about? This is an indoor range.
You take somebody who's all jacked up on absorbing lead dust for a couple hours shooting at the range, and mom's multitasking or dad's multitasking, and say there's a fender bumper bender out in front. You know, what's the reasonable assertion? What's the reasonable exposure of additional risk that a community is willing to put itself in? So it's all about numbers. You guys know this, right?
Say what? Gunfights over fender benders is a prediction made by every insane anti-gun nut. And we laugh because it's utter crap. Hey, but maybe I'm laughing because the number of gunfights over fender benders is so rare that it can be approximated as 0. Or maybe I'm laughing because I'm all jacked up on lead dust.
Important message, right? Don't compromise. Don't concede. Right? Yeah. You can't give them an inch. Can't give them an inch.
This is a great quote to end on. They want all gun transfers to be at gun shops, and they don't want gun shops. They don't want us to have guns without proper training, and they don't want proper training facilities to exist. They call themselves gun violence prevention activists. And just by you owning a gun, they consider you violent. He talks about not ceding 1 inch to the pro-gun side, but we need to do the exact same thing with dealing with them, because anti-gunners never argue in good faith.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's W-E-E-R-D world.com.
Plug of the week, the War Stories podcast. Now, I think it was about a week ago, I saw an article by Angry Staff Officer, which I've seen him around a couple of times. He'll write things about Star Wars a lot, but from the perspective of an actual professional military man. He's in the National Guard now, but I think he was active duty as an engineer officer. Well, the particular article was No More Task Force Rogue Ones, a tactical analysis of the raid on, is that Scarif or Scarif or whatever the heck?
I believe it's Scarif.
Whatever the place that they fought at Rogue One, and he just ripped the whole raid apart from the perspective of the way the army does a raid. It was a terrible, terrible raid. People got killed that shouldn't have. They had no plans. And he goes through this whole thing. I thought, oh, that's pretty funny and pretty good. And I think you had something to say about that because you read it too.
This is absolutely within my wheelhouse. I love it when someone takes a concept that is either fantastic or absurd or fictional and then goes at it with absolute dogmatic realism, dissecting it with complete seriousness. I don't know why, but I just love that. It is hilarious and delightful to me. And he did that.
So I got to the bottom of this blog post and I read about the author. Angry Staff Officer is an Army engineer officer who is adrift in a sea of doctrine and staff operations and uses writing as a means to retain his sanity. He also collaborates on the podcast with Aidan Dobkin entitled War Stories, which examines key moments in the history of warfare. And I said, podcast? War Stories? Oh, well, you know, definitely I need to go check that out. I downloaded one, I started listening to it, and I said, this is really good. I downloaded all of them. There's 7 so far. I think they come out monthly. And it's almost the entire first season. So they're going to have an episode 8, but the first season is all about armor. Trying to explain War Stories is a little difficult. So what I'm going to have to do here is I'm just going to read their description off their Patreon page. War is simultaneously the most inhuman and human activity, something that calls on our most basic instincts in a unique way. However, we tend to view war and conflict through one of two distinct lenses. Either we remember the stories of heroic individuals as if they were gliding above the arc of history, or we remember conflicts as monolithic entities in and of themselves, as statistics and figures. War Story seeks to bridge those two lenses by examining the development of warfare through individual stories existing at crucial moments in conflict. The final cavalry charge on horseback before tanks could face down machine gun fire without a dent. The most heavily decorated armor unit in World War I. The young airmen from the United States and USSR who came closest to launching nuclear weapons. And with them, starting World War III. War Stories is the narrative audio series focused on the stories at the heart of conflict. In each season of the show, we focus on a particular component of warfare. Think armor and tanks, strategy, artillery. Over the course of the season, the arc of that topic's development is traced from inception up to the present day, with each episode focusing on a particular story at a key point in its development. War Stories is hosted by Angry Staff Officer and Aiden Dobkin. I want you to picture in your head the most absurd combined arms warfare you can imagine. A horse cavalry charge supported by close air support. Can you imagine such a thing?
Was the close air support biplane in World War I?
In fact, it was. It's a story of something that happened in World War I. And we all know that World War I, they shouldn't have had any horse cavalry. There's just a terrible mistake. Nobody should have had horses. But you know what? Check out War Stories. They have the story of how this happened and why it wasn't actually that bad of an idea. It's interesting, the stuff that they talk about. Some of it's bizarre, some of it's sort of familiar, but most of it is really stuff you've never heard before. So I really recommend it. Check it out. If you look in the show notes, you'll see links to the podcast on Facebook, their Patreon account, and, of course, that article, No More Task Force Rogue Ones. Or you can just look for them at warstoriescast.com. You can also find them on iTunes. Well, that's our show for the week. Remember that the Gunblog Variety Cast is a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode134.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you.
The suspect remained fairly communicative with the negotiators and police during the course of the incident. Afterwards, the team went in to collect the suspect. From these reviews, police hope to gain knowledge as to whether anything of... Oh, Jesus, who writes this crap?
One of the students, who was diabetic, started experiencing hyper... Whoop, there we go. And because it's light sensitive and requires... And because it's light sensitive and requires refrigeration, you can't carry it around in your first aid kit. There are some shelf-stable.
So I got to the bottom of this article. Oh, let me spin. So I got to the bottom of this blog post and I read. War Stories is a narrative audio series focused on the. War Stories is the narrative audio series focused on the stories at the heart of conflict. In each season of the show, we focus on a particular component of warfare. Think armor and tanks.
This is a URS production.